Blog Talk Radio.
Clear creeks and cool mountain mornings, honest work out in the field, cornbread in my mama's kitchen, daddy's saying grace before the meal. Family ties run deep in this land, and I'm never very far from what I am. I was born country, and that's what I'll always be. Like the rivers and the woodland, wild and free. I got 100 years of down home running through my blood. I was born country, and this country's what I love. Moonlight. Here beside me, crickets serenading in the yard. What more could two people ask for, laying here in love beneath the stars? Now this is where I want to raise my kids, just the way my mom and daddy did. I was born country, and that's what I'll always be. Like the rivers and the woodlands, wild and free. I got 100 years of down home running through my blood. I was born country, and this country's what I love. That's what I'll always be. Like the rivers and the woodlands, wild and free. I got 100 years of down home running through my blood. I was born country, and this country's what I love. I was born country.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining me. My name is Michael Magic. I will be your host, and we are set up here for the next 2 hours. Today is Friday, September 14th, 2012, and I just set this show up approximately 20 minutes ago, so I'm not sure if it even appeared up there, so I don't know how many listeners we will have immediately in our chat room, so I hope some people will take advantage of this program, which I am doing impromptu tonight because I just hated to see a day go by and another blank spot, which has been paid for, when we can clearly take advantage of this. And I am sitting here not doing a whole lot when I could be doing something, so I have decided to do something. And it seems like I am not coming up with any audio for some reason. I don't know why. But we will try to find out here. So let me play another song here and see if I can get some audio. We'll be right back with our program.
The time that I spend alone, sailing on the cool and bright clear water. Lots of those friendly people, they're showing me ways to go, but I never want to lose their inspiration.
Oh,
Okay, we are still having a few problems because of having this show created just minutes before it aired. So let's try one more song here and see if we can get this straightened out. We'll be back right after this. Okay, we are back, and I hope that everybody has audio. This show was scheduled very late, about 15 minutes before it was scheduled to go on air. So if I do have audio out there, that would be great to know if anyone can hear me. But I guess we will have to wait and see what happens here. Just bear with me, please. And let's see if we... Well, I'm not sure. Okay. Well, I am not sure. I have something that I could try, but I really don't want to. I did put a fresh link into our current chat room, and hopefully everybody can hear me on that. Maybe what I need to do is to recall in and restart this show and reschedule it. I don't know. If I should keep going like this, or if I should start on my topics that I have many of which to discuss. We do have several people in our chat room, one says that they can hear music, and that would be great. If they could hear my voice, that would be even better. I'm not sure exactly, like I said, I know this is a real pain, and I guess I learned a lesson not to schedule a show 20 to 25 minutes before it's ready to go on air, because it must take Blog Talk Radio some time to be able to get into what is going on here. Anyway, I think I will go ahead and start this, and we will go from there. As everyone knows, there is much going on around the globe right now. We have many happenings over in the Middle East, which I am not going to talk too much about. One, because I do not know a whole lot, although I do know some about what is going on, but I do not want to give inaccurate information to anyone. I just have not had time to do all of the research on that I would like to. But I did do a show last night regarding Ben Bernanke and his supposedly quantitative easing 3 that has been enacted. It is an open-ended quantitative easing, which obviously means that it has no end and he's going to let it go on. And he is going to, through our federal government, even though he is a private bank, spend to the tune of $40 billion per month. And he believes that will pick up our economy. But I truly believe the main reason why he has done this is so that it will help reelect Mr. Obama. But that is in last night's show. That is not either what I came here tonight to discuss. And I do have quite a long topic, and I just do not know if my audio is going on here. And that would be nice to know. It really would. And I'm trying to find that out. So just please bear with me here, if you would. And we will continue from here, or else I will log out and re-enter in to this and reset it up again. Oh, okay. We have Mr. Oz and Ron in our chat room, and Oz tells me that the audio is good. And I thank you for that, because I really have no way of knowing. And there's nothing like, you know, talking to a telephone and having nothing talk back to you. So my topic tonight is about America. It's about the past, it's about the present, and it's about the future of America. And it is also about what God has to say about all of this. And what are his plans? Many people, many, many people have plans for America. But the plans of God are the only ones, at least in my mind, that really, really count. So let's kind of go with that. And like I said, this is an impromptu show. It was set up just minutes before it aired, and obviously we had some problems, and I think we're okay now. So that is a good thing, okay? So here we go. Buckle up your seatbelts, and we will start on our topic of tonight. And I would say, I guess, in spite of all the talk that we hear today regarding the New World Order, it is important to note that mankind's attempts at trying to create a New World Order are neither new nor are they orderly. Attempts at creating a New World Order have always been built on a foundation of chaos and confusion. These attempts are as old as history itself. In fact, the New World Order first appears in the book of Genesis, the very first book of the Bible, a civilization that arose in the world, as stated in the book of Genesis, was a very flawed process. It was inspired by mankind and specifically designed to create a unity of language and a natural tendency that caused different groups of people to journey from place to place until at last they all resided in a place called the Land of Shemir. This region today is currently known as Iraq. This historic location is also known, and the city referred to in the book of Genesis, as the city of Babylon. The Bible indicates that the mighty leader Nimrod decided to draw all peoples together to form a powerful society in this rich farmland. The people then decided to declare and secure their unified might by constructing a massive tower whose top would reach, I guess they supposed, into the heaven and would stand as a proud symbol, proclaiming mankind's power and mankind's self-sufficiency, and draw people into their new and one world order. They thought, why risk tribal warfare among groups? With a single unified kingdom, we can achieve universal peace. Why create, they thought, different religions and viewpoints? With one kingdom, we will end the possibility of religious disputes. And with a single language, we can create a global economy and prosperity for all. And as reasonable as all of this sounds, one might wonder just what the problem was with this plan. The answer is that it was, and it is still to this day, an act of rebellion against God. The centralization of humanity violated God's purpose. As the Apostle Paul tells us, from one man he made every nation of men, that they should inhabit the whole earth, and he determined the time set for them and the exact places that they should live. God's intent for the nations was for people to spread across the entire earth, not to congregate in just one place. In the beginning, he had told mankind to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. You can find that in Genesis chapter 9, verse 1. He wanted the whole earth populated with his image bearers. This command was a foreshadowing of the Great Commission, in which Jesus commanded his disciples to repopulate the earth with a new race of spiritual people born again in the image of his Son. You can find that in Romans chapter 8, verse 29. Also in Matthew chapter 8, verses 16 through 20. As Apostle Paul explained, God scattered men and set the exact places where they should live so that they would seek after God. It appears that the Lord knew that the settling of the masses in smaller communities throughout the world would foster a mentality where people could openly and freely worship God, unlike massive centralization, where people would be tempted towards self-importance and their own sense of power. Centralization would tempt people to rely on their own collective wisdom, their own strength, instead of trusting in the Lord. It is also self-evident that the men and women of this original New World Order became filled with pride, and they defied God. It is very plain and simple to see that. Violating his decree regarding separation of the nations, they came together to build their own world, and with their tower, attempted to ascend to heaven and become their own gods. The Lord knew that they could infect all creation with their madness, and like the days before the flood, wipe the knowledge of God from the minds of men. It was at this time that the Lord garbled the speech of all mankind and scattered them throughout the earth. In spite of Babel's failure, the temptation of uniting nations for strength and security has persisted to this present time. When men try using their own power to build a complex of nations and make them cohere without God, All they succeed in doing is separating themselves from God and laying a foundation where destruction can be the only outcome. And that is exactly what will happen to the future New World Order that men are working on as I speak. As we have seen, history was and is a great teacher. But it is only a great teacher if mankind, the people of America and the people of the world, are willing to be great students. An example of this is that wars usually have an end. But as we have witnessed over the last century, one war simply leads almost immediately to another war, or even multiple wars, or a military conflict, whichever you choose to call them. And they can continue on longer than even a decade or more. One of the first attempts of modern man to establish world peace, as many of you know, was in 1919. It was called the League of Nations. It was the precursor of the United Nations. Although it was disbanded after World War II in 1946, just 27 years after its inception, it appears that shortly thereafter, the shock of nuclear weapons and the possibility of global destruction once again led certain people and governments to work towards a unified global government. The United Nations is headquartered in New York City on an 18-acre campus, symbolizes and encourages a modern-day attempt at creating a new world order. It seems to me that that is about their only purpose, the United Nations, is helping other people create a one world order. The United Nations campus is actually international territory. It exists and is recognized as a sovereign territory of the world. It does not belong, nor is it the property even, of the city of New York. Not even the state of New York. Not even the United States of America. It simply exists as a self-sufficient entity. And it can be justifiably labeled, I guess, as an island within a city. It is very apparent that all of the United Nations' attempts at making the world a better place is nothing more than an example of bureaucracy run amok, plain and simple. The United Nations is overrun with fraud, pointless debates, international mismanagement, and ludicrous behavior. I've seen better behavior from three-year-olds. I guess a classic case of this would be the Human Rights Commission that was selected in the year 2005, consisting of the countries of Sudan, Zimbabwe, China, Russia, and Saudi Arabia. These countries were chosen to head the Human Rights Commission. Every one of these countries has itself been accused of major human rights violations. It is indeed a classic case of sending the fox to guard the hen house. As you can see, I am not a fan of the United Nations. I never have been. And I never will. It is a totally ineffective because of the widely varying interests of its members. Its goals are often blocked by special interests, and many of its directives are consistently ignored in regards to smaller countries. Its peacekeeping efforts are a complete and total failure. Look around the world today and tell me that the United Nations is helping to stop war or military conflict. The United Nations is not doing that because they are controlled by other entities. As I just told you about borders on complete irrelevancy, the United Nations can no more accomplish world peace than the Tower of Babel could even accomplish a new world order. But even if the United Nations were effective in all the above areas that I just mentioned, I would still not be a supporter of them. The UN and its views of world government are a complete and direct violation of God's ordained intent for mankind. As the Tower of Babel, the League of Nations and the United Nations demonstrates throughout history, mankind's attempts at world peace have always failed, and they will continue to fail as long as fallen man rules the earth. Christ told his disciples, "You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom." That does not mean, however, that we must despair of world peace ever coming to our planet. In fact, the Bible promises that world peace will come. God's word anticipates a future time when Jesus Christ will reign in perfect righteousness. And not until that time will there be a new world order with any chance to create world peace. The Bible and how it speaks about world peace creates tension for many Christians. And you can see that by looking around at all the different religions that are out there. But after all, does the Bible not say that we are to be people of peace? Romans chapter 12, verse 18, urges us to do all we reasonably can to live peaceably with all men. All men. So why shouldn't Christians support global efforts to secure peace among the nations? We must remember that passages in the Bible that apply to us individually may not always apply to governments. Christians should refrain from supporting political efforts that call for the uniting of nations to achieve world peace. And that is worth repeating, and so I shall. Christians should refrain from supporting political efforts that call for the uniting of nations to achieve world peace. Not only because the consolidation of nation opposes God's intent for mankind, but also because all attempts at man-made global peace are futile. Just as every one of man's attempts to change any of God's plans has failed, so will mankind's attempt to achieve peace by producing a new world order. This is something that very few people consider, is the fact that we are being led to believe that the economic and military instability in today's volatile world has brought the nations of the world to the point where they must unite in a common cause of survival, supposedly. But any such global attempt would be a surface unity only. It will never succeed. The differences in cultures among 192 countries and religions and goals and economics among the nations of the world are far too vast to be melted into a true unity. It would be a unity of appearance only. Obviously, a false unity. The difference between a false unity and a true unity is the difference between surface appearance and inner reality. Permanent and genuine unity must come from within. It must come from your heart. It must come from love. It must come from morals and values. There must be a oneness of spirit and heart among peoples that serve as a basis for true inner unity. False unity can be imposed by an external force by suppressing people's true beliefs. And that is what our current New World Order is doing. But it lacks the power, really, to bind people together, their spirit and their hearts. Yes, it can cause havoc. It can cause military conflicts. It can cause financial distress, this new world order. It started a long time ago. It is currently still going on. But it really is a unity of thing. It is nothing that has a solid foundation. It is nothing that is in the spirit and in the hearts of people. And therefore, it will fail. It is just a matter of time. Furthermore, people will never find true unity because of the sinful nature of man. Our sinful nature shall truly prevent our coming to a consensus on truth. The prophet Jeremiah puts it this way: the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. And who can truly know it? You can find that in Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 9. Humanity may unite with good intentions, but as long as the hearts remain wicked, nothing good will be produced. As you can see from the previous statements, it is very obvious that Christians should not support or place any faith in a new world order, because such a global union would give the Antichrist the political framework he needs to inflict his horrors on an unsuspecting mankind. This is why it is so vitally important to help other people come to know Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Much of the talk we hear today about a new world order suggests that when the U.S. economy fails, it will pull the entire world's economy down with it. And with America's economy now teetering on the brink, specific people are groping for a new system that will end the concentration of wealth and power in one nation and spread it around the globe so that one sinking nation will no longer carry the huge weight that pulls the others down. Given man's persistence in repeating history over and over, the immediate future of our world does not look good. But Christians can have faith in the fact that God has given us prophetic warnings enabling us to resist the search for a man-made solution to today's economic and political problems. We can rest assured that God's plan for the future of mankind includes our protection until He Himself returns to set the earth right with a true and righteous new world order, a place of peace and prosperity. I would also like to remind my fellow brothers and sisters that the Lord Himself said, "Be faithful unto me, as I will never leave you, nor forsake you." We are going to take just a short break right here, and I am going to play one song, and we are going to jump right back into this topic, and we are going to talk at that time, when I come back, about some history, something called Black Tuesday, which happened October 29th, 2009. And I am trying to find my song here. There we go. Please enjoy this. We'll be back shortly. Okay, we are back. We are live. You are listening to Michael Magic on this Friday edition, a radio segment of the Patriot Family, which is our host. And I want to thank everybody for joining me this evening, and I am covering a topic I think is important that I do not want people to forget about, and it is a topic that I did cover approximately a year ago, but if you people have the memory that I do, you may have forgotten some of this, hopefully. So hopefully it does not sound too repetitive. If anyone would take care, Rod, if anyone would like to call in, you can feel free to do that. I am monitoring. So you will be able to do that if you like. If not, I will continue. I do have a caller on here, so at this time, since we are halfway through our show, we'll see who we have here. I am not sure because I don't have these telephone numbers memorized, unfortunately, and I do apologize for that. So,
shame on you, Michael.
I know. I'm bad, and I have so many numbers here. I just cannot recognize every single one, but I did have a feeling that it was you. Please welcome Mr. Ron Golden, future president of the United States, aboard.
Oh, man, that was odd. I tried calling in on Skype, and I was getting music from a different show entirely, and you weren't on at all. It was just very odd.
Well,
but
what happened?
Here I am.
What happened there, Ron, is I scheduled this show about 25 minutes too, and I guess it takes BTR some time before it puts the link up there, the actual link that, you know, people can get into. So I learned a lesson there anyway. Don't schedule a show, so close.
Well, and I would have thought that, you know, the Skype number would have taken me right into the studio, just like the landline, but evidently that wasn't the case. Just a little odd, that's all. But, you know, great topic tonight. And, boy, there's so much in the economic arena. I really find it bizarre that none of these stories with all the protests, the other embassies that are under attack around the Middle East right now, that none of these stories were released until after the stock markets closed today. I heard nothing of this on the radio, even alternative media today. Of course, it wasn't released on the news wires until after 5:30.
Well,
Friday is always moving day in the market.
Yep.
And any time we're going to have bad news that the powers that be don't want to impact the market, then it seems that the news wire and the press releases don't occur until after the market is closed on Friday.
That seems to be the case for sure, and as you stated, you know, there is an awful lot going on, and to the average person who does not have a great deal of knowledge of world affairs, you know, would think that, you know, the death of people, Americans, you know, overseas, and embassy problems and things like that would be, you know, at the forefront of those people's minds who do not have the knowledge of it, okay? But I kind of tend, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, but what Mr. Bernanke did yesterday in allowing his open-ended $40 billion per month quantitative easing three, I think all of this is a huge cover-up to take attention away from that personally. But go ahead, Ron.
I don't know that it's so much a cover-up to take away attention. I think that it's, it's just BS that the State Department is coming out and saying it's all because of some stupid YouTube and video and some movie that's anti-Islamic. And it's just, it pales logic, quite honestly, that, you know, we see all this civil unrest in these Muslim centers while the media and the government is decrying that, you know, Islam is a peaceful religion and we shouldn't hold Muslims accountable for what Muslims do. It's insanity. And we never bother to ask the appropriate questions, like, why did we have an embassy in Libya to begin with? Why do we have an embassy in Egypt? Why are we putting American lives at risk in these various locations while simultaneously using our military to manipulate their political arena within these countries, causing a lot of distrust of America and a lot of resentment toward America?
Now, I don't know for sure, Ron, but my guess would be that many of these countries, like you say, that we have embassies in and stuff, my guess would be that we also have military bases there. Would that might be correct?
Well, we do in many of them. Of course, we didn't have a military base in Libya. And to my knowledge, we don't have a military base in Egypt. But at the same time, I think it's time for the American people to have the conversation, at the very least, about our foreign policy. You know, one of the things that yourself and myself and Mike, who's in the chat room, the one thing that we've heard decried against Ron Paul since his presidential bid in 2008 is that, you know, everyone agrees. They didn't agree with his economic ideology in 2008, but they certainly, most of them, agree with him now that everything that he's said has come to pass. But, you know, his foreign policy, oh, God, his foreign policy. And I think it's time that we have an adult conversation as to the legitimacy of what has been our foreign policy for the last 80-plus years. I think what we're seeing right now is not a it's a consequence of our actions over the last 80-plus years. And I know there are those people who would like to argue that it was our obligation and duty to suppress the Muslims from being able to be in a position to recreate another caliphate. I know this is the talk that Glenn Beck has been cheerleading since he got on Fox News. And yet, in spite of all of our supposed best attempts and efforts, That is exactly what we see unfolding. And even within our own government, as you have so eloquently pointed out, we have a veritable infiltration of Muslim extremists. And when I say Muslim extremist, I include in that anyone who is a believer in Islam. So I think we really need to question the benefits and the payoff of our foreign policy of the last 80 years, because it has not stopped anything.
No, you're absolutely correct, Ron. It has done nothing. And, you know, the injection of the League of Nations and the United Nations, which were created to, initially created to, end hunger around the world, and then continuing on with that to help create peace, they have not succeeded in any of this. They are just useless entities.
Well, the fundamental mandate for the United Nations was to bring about world peace and to end the atmosphere in which war was even possible. It was to supposedly to bring all the parties to the table, number one. But if you go and read the United Nations Charter, you will see that they want to bring about peace through global disarmament. And when they say disarmament, what they mean, quite literally, is stripping the citizens of all the various countries around the globe from the ability to have or possess any kind of weapon with which they could retaliate or fight back against the presumed authority of the various states and of the eventual United Nations peacekeeping forces, which I would submit to you that at this point in time in our lives equates to the United States military. And I think when we look at the situation where we came into Afghanistan and Iraq, that I don't see it as anything other than a coalition, exactly what Bush kept yapping about, a coalition of militaries that were from United Nations member states, trying to give legitimacy to UN peacekeeping, only they weren't wearing the blue helmets. You know, I caught some heat from a caller a couple of weeks ago when I pointed out that we were going into Iraq because we were going to enforce 13 United Nations resolutions that had been ignored by Saddam Hussein, which is precisely what our then President George Bush proclaimed. I believe he was telling the truth when he said that.
Yeah, I think you're very, very right, Ron. You're doing a great job, so go ahead and continue with your comments, because I'm enjoying it for sure.
Well, and I appreciate the accolades, but it's really just common sense. And, we have this thing in our society called cognitive dissonance. And that is, Linda and I talked about it the other night. I talked about it some on my show. It's a big term or phrase, but really it's quite simple. And that is that we don't want to believe anything that would threaten our perception of the world and the way things really are. Perception is reality. So how we perceive the world in our mind, for us on an individual level, is reality. And all these people that go around waving the flag and wanting to, tout the military and, support the troops and all that, that is really cognitive dissonance. We don't even allow for the possibility, even remotely, that our government might be using our military in a manner that is counter to our best interests, or that they may be using our military overseas to suppress or oppress people. And in fact, we encourage the oppression of Islamic countries because we have a very fond hatred of Islam, and that is reinforced when we turn on CNN or Fox News and we see the Twin Towers on fire and collapsing, and when we see the Lockerbie bombing of an airliner, when we see the protests in Egypt, and now, of course, it's just being reinforced even more with the murder of our ambassador in Libya, the protests that are going on all over the Middle East. And then at the same time, we're being told by the media and the powers that be that it's just a small, radical, fanatical element within those Islamic nations that are fomenting all this. And I think it leaves a lot of people very confused. And the default thought process is, well, we've got to stop this. We've got to use our military, and we've got to crush these people because this is an act of war. And that is precisely the reaction that your government is counting on. It's sad. And at no time do we allow for the possibility that perhaps we've been wrong. And perhaps after all these many years, these Muslims are so pissed, and now they are becoming more bold, and they're beginning to put actions to their anger.
It seems like there's just more and more of that going on, Ron. You know, it's something that, especially with, you know, elections coming up and, you know, economies having, you know, great, great problems, you know, with the euro and even in America here, that, you know, this seems like a prime time for them.
Well, you know, it seems to me, and I hate to make this analogy because of the terrorist connotation, but if we take the terrorist moniker or name or label off of what's going on right now overseas, I believe in my heart that what we're seeing around the world, and in particularly in these areas where there's all these protests, and even in Libya, at the embassy, the attacks, that is the equivalent in the Middle East of the Tea Party and the Occupy movement here in the United States. What I mean by that is that the atmosphere, the disgust, the anger over decades and decades of being screwed over by their government in the Middle East has given rise to a lot of anger. It's been pent up. And, of course, some of that anger was directed at Mubarak in Egypt, because they felt, and I think quite properly they felt, that he was nothing more than a puppet of the United States. We saw the same thing occur in Iran in 1979, and I think we saw the same thing occur against Gaddafi in Libya. I think you're seeing the same thing occur in Syria. And, you know, we have been, through our government and various covert operations over the decades, we have been manipulating and interfering with the governments in these countries literally since the 1940s. And I think we're seeing a culmination of that. You know, imagine, of course, you're old enough, Mike, to remember growing up in a time not too long after World War II. And I don't mean that you were born in the 40s, but what I mean is that, you know, all through the 50s and 60s and 70s even, there was this animosity towards Japan and people of Japanese descent. And all I heard growing up was Japanese junk, just Japanese junk. And there was this animosity towards Japan. And that same animosity, because they had attacked us, and then we were buying all of their goods because they were cheap, okay, and that helped stave off inflation because of our monetary policy at the time. Of course, Americans weren't so fanatical that we were going to rise up and start attacking the Japanese embassy or stoning Japanese people in the streets. We're a little more sophisticated than that here. But I think we're seeing the obvious outcome.
It's something very similar, Ron, because it took, you know, many decades for people to, you know, not be prejudiced against the Japanese people for what they had done. And even today, with, you know, what is going on in the Middle East with you know, the Muslims, the terrorists, all of that, it's going to take, you know, a long time for a lot of people, you know, unless you understand it a little bit better, you know, to really, you know, get over it and understand what it's truly all about.
Well, you know, and Oz is making a comment in the chat room, and I agree with him about Sharia law needs to become a distant memory. But I want to qualify that statement by saying in this country, okay? And if our government had not so thoroughly and completely eviscerated our law and our system of law in this country to the point that it has become what in the law is called void for vagueness, because the law is so overbroad and over vague that it applies in the way in which they want to interpret it at any time, in any situation. If that had not occurred, we would not have even the remotest of possibilities of Sharia law even being a discussion in this country. And yet, we're at a point in time when that is being discussed. As far as the rest of, you know, the Islamic world, I think the people there should have been left to make their own decisions. And if we look at the reality of the situation, let's look at it from both sides of the coin. Suppose for a moment, and of course we can only speculate, suppose that the United States government had stayed out of the Muslim business of messing with their political systems overseas. I am willing to bet money that had our government not been involved and just had taken a complete hands-off attitude, that the anger and the angst and the frustration that we're seeing displayed towards the United States today would be being displayed against the mullahs and the ayatollahs and against the idea of Islam, because it would have been Islam and the ayatollahs and the mullahs that would have been seen as the oppressors, as the tyrannical bastards that were suppressing the people and their freedoms. But instead, they see our intervention and the mullahs and the ayatollahs tell them, see, it's the great Satan, and they want to destroy your religion, and we're here to help you, and we're here to save you, and so the tables are turned. I really, truly believe that, you know, had we left well enough alone, that the people would understand fully how oppressive Islam is and would be without the intervention of the U.S., Britain, and others. And I think the people would fundamentally reject Islam because of it.
You know, I would definitely put an emphasis on what you just said, on the word others, okay, because I do believe that much of what is happening, you know, as you know, Ron, for centuries, that these wars, these military conflicts are financed on, you know, both sides, by the Illuminati, and, you know, I still think that they are influencing people, groups of people, so that they can complete what they think is an agenda, but it is not. It isn't just an evil thing that will never work, but I do think that it is being influenced. I don't think it's just people out there doing what they think is right or doing because... you know, they want to get back at Christians or this or that. I think there is something deeper behind all of this, and there is finances as well that go along with it and encouraging these people to do what they're doing.
Yeah, you know. Sorry, I was typing a ambassador, sorry. You know, I said it is the U.S. government who can shut down violent opposition to missionaries. And I said, like they shut down violent opposition to our ambassador. and Oz, I understand that's not how you see it. And that's part of what we're talking about. I understand... the dislike and distrust of Islam. They have a very long history of doing exactly what's going on right now. What we also have to look at is our government, the U.S. government, also has a very long history of doing much the same thing. And the one key thing for me that I would point to most people, I thought, I could be wrong, but I was pretty certain that during the whole NATO campaign in Libya, we were aiding Al-Qaeda fighters to overthrow Gaddafi. That's certainly what the news reports were saying. And certainly the news reports have come out that, you know, Al-Qaeda is involved in Syria as well. And I would point out that, gee, isn't this Al-Qaeda? I mean, this is the blanket name we give to Muslim fighters, whether they're Mujahideen freedom fighters or whether they're the evil terrorists that we're battling. And it seems that the government wants to have their cake and eat it too. And that's really a problem. I don't think that we should be interfering with their government, their form of government, and being involved at any level in their governments. However, that being said, you know, it's kind of like the old saying, you broke it, you got to fix it. And there's only two ways that I can see that to handle the situation. One way I'm adamantly opposed to, because I know what it'll bring about. One way to handle it is to do what our politically correct government will never do, and that is to declare all-out war on Islam, period. And start targeting mosques, start targeting Mecca, and by God, just go out and wage a right and proper war. However, that, as I'm sure most everyone would agree, is going to bring about a global war. The other option, if I were elected president, and we had this conversation before, I would announce that the United States is removing all personnel from all of the countries worldwide, Germany, Japan, Europe, all of the Middle East. We will no longer hold embassies in any country, South America, Central America, any of them. They're all coming home, period. But I would also make sure that in that statement, it would be made abundantly clear to those who would be an enemy of the United States of America by any type of hostile act towards any American or American interest, that if, let's say, Egypt were to allow an attack on Americans on Egyptian soil, as we were winding down our presence in Egypt, there would be no discussion, there would be no waiting period. There would be an absolute declaration of war against Egypt, and there would not be a single target in Egypt that would be accepted. Everything would be open for targeting, civilian and military. I think with that type of statement, there would be a tremendous amount of pressure on the people in those countries that actually wanted to live rather than become a martyr for Allah, not to allow a single hair on a single American head to be harmed. So I understand the thinking and the anger and the angst. I'm not trying to say that, Muslims and Islam have never carried out any atrocious acts. They certainly have for a very long time. In fact, since the beginning of Islam, Islam was founded on the ideology of murder, rape, and pillaging. It's time that we accept that. But I think it's also time we accept responsibility for our own brand of murder and pillage. And, just simply say, hey, clearly our policy has not functioned in the way in which we had hoped, and therefore the United States is pulling all of its military presence out from around the world. Period. Period. And I see Oz and Mike are talking about the Crusades. And, you know, yes, there certainly has been a battle going on with Islam for decades. And, you know, I really think that Saddam Hussein had it right. There's two times that I can recall in my life where I have heard a head of state make a statement. And I thought in my mind, at the moment I heard the statement, that it was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard, only to later realize that it was accurate and I was plainly mistaken. And those two instances were, number one, William Jefferson Clinton, when he said, "It depends on what is, is." And I later found out that there were 18 legal definitions of the word is. The second one was when I heard Saddam Hussein claim that the United States had launched a holy war, and it would be the mother of all wars. I thought he was nuts when he said that. It looks as if he was correct, because we're seeing the escalation daily. And I honestly believe, as you have talked about the powers that be, the New World Order, the Illuminati, and whatever other name people want to put on it, I believe that people, not just Americans, but people globally, are being and have been manipulated for just this purpose.
I think you are absolutely 100% correct, Ron. I mean, this has been going on for a long time. You know, history shows us how many times throughout history, going back thousands of years, that this has happened during, you know, different, you know, peoples, countries, the dissatisfaction that they had with each other and the fighting and the wars and the debt that was created, by this. And this is not at all God's purpose. You know, God's purpose is really, and, you know, I am a born-again Christian. Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior. But I don't really know that much about the Muslim religion, okay? But someplace there must be something that they should love all of mankind. If it's not in their Bible or whatever, then I don't know what to say about it, except that it does not have a great foundation at all, because the King James Bible, which is the most widely published book in the world, you know, states that we shall love, you know, one another and all mankind. And the only way that this is not happening is just because of what you said, Ron, is because that we have, people globally have been, you know, mentally manipulated, you know, and controlled by other people who think that they can do it better, that think through greed, that think through corruption.
Yeah, and, you know, the idea that these other countries cannot defeat Islam in their own country without the United States being around is just, I think, folly. I mean, either, you know, it's kind of like the American people right now and not standing up to our federal government. It's not because the government is so powerful. It's because the people lack the will. Plain and simple.
Well, when you lack the will, doesn't that say something about being mentally manipulated?
Well, it does. Absolutely. And, you know, I have no illusions, if you will, that if the United States military pulled out of all the different various places around the world, that there would be some chaos and civil unrest going on. No question. I don't doubt that for a moment. The problem is not ours, quite honestly. The problem is France. And you know, I think on a bigger level, on a much bigger level, if we were honest about it, what is it that has granted these Muslims a foothold in all of Europe, if not for the politically correct socialist garbage crap system that they have implemented as their government over there? They've believed in this lie of socialist utopia for so long, and they don't get it. And they're having buyer's remorse right now. So is Germany. And I'm sorry, but they're just not my problem.
You make a good point there, Ron, about, you know, the doors being basically left open because, you know, the countries are, you know, socialist countries, communist countries. It just seems to make a lot of sense to me.
Well, it's history repeating itself, for goodness sakes. And you're going to tell me that the people in these countries don't have the will to marshal a military and fight back against these barbarians when they rise up? I still fail to see how that becomes my problem. You know, at some point, and I can promise you, at some point in the game, people will get damn tired of being oppressed and rise up. And I agree with Oz that international trade would be greatly affected. Our economy is already in shambles. International trade is already in a shambles. Okay? And the United States of America, whether the rest of the world likes it or not, we do have it within our ability to be wholly self-sufficient. But we've fallen into this belief that we have to have all of these goods from all around the world, and we do not. And I'm not talking about becoming isolationist. I'm just simply saying that we need to recognize that our survival, our existence, does not depend on the whole rest of the world being happy and engaging in free trade. It's in their best interest to engage in free trade with us and everyone else. It's a mutually beneficial relationship that is called free market capitalism. The cost of our current ideology is far too high. We cannot afford it. It's just plain logistics. And clearly, it doesn't work.
Ron, I hate to interrupt you. We do have another caller here. But if you need to continue and finish what you were talking about, please do.
Go right ahead, because I'm sure that's Mike. And I would only ask Mike to please try to refrain from expletives.
Now, Ron, you know that I keep it clean.
Well, I know you do. just for our more sensitive listeners, but it's real easy. I've had to fight the urge to let fly with a few expletives myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, here's the deal. You know, non-interventionism doesn't equal isolationism. And look, you know, we've had a foreign policy of bomb dropping, and then now here's the right way to live. And, you know, you have to look at it from, you know, in another point of view. If I'm on the other side of the world and I'm watching the Democratic National Convention, which the main platform is killing babies at will, same-sex marriage, which leads to same-sex families, and giving amnesty to illegals. Well, you know, on the other side of the globe, they kill you if you're gay. So now, here I am, I'm on the other side of the world, and I'm having another country bomb the snot out of me and then tell me how to live. What would my natural reaction be? Wouldn't I fight back? And vice versa? Of course. I mean, we would fight back in the same way, I would expect. Matter of fact, we did. But Great Britain was not just taxing us to death, they were coming into our homes at will, hanging us at will. We fought back. And that's how it works. And a foreign policy of nation building and trying to change the landscape, not only is it unsuccessful, it's downright bullying. And they need the smallest of reasons to attack our embassies and kill our people. They need the slightest reason. And their leaders capitulate to that end. 3 days later, we hear from Marcy saying, oh, please stop the riots. 3 days later, a half-hearted plea for cessation of violence. Doesn't work. And look what we've done. Look what we've done with Iran. We abandoned the Shah. We get a maniac theocracy. We abandoned Mubarak. We've got the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, what does it take for people to get it? This is a religious fight. This is Christianity versus Islam, and government has no place to fight it. You want to convert the Muslims? Let the Franciscan monks do it.
Well, you know,
bombs and bases ain't going
to
do it.
If you want to convert the Muslims, you convert them to corpses. I mean, we either have to be honest, okay, and I've been screaming this since the beginning of this doggone mess. You know, we got the national media every day. Oh, it's radical Islam. I want to choke Sean Hannity every time he says that because it gives credence to the idea that there is some form of Islam out there that is not radical. Okay? It's all radical.
Well, Ron, you're right. And to accentuate that, you know, our media and our wonderful president and secretary of state tried to say that it was a small band of people. Don't blame the country. Really? Well, we gave them their free elections, and they elected the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, did a small band of people get the Muslim Brotherhood in, or did the majority of the people vote and put them in? I say it's the latter, isn't it? That is a true, Egypt is a true reflection of what the Muslims feel about the West. And like you said about making them into corpses, and what I've been saying all along, you either nuke them or you leave them. But this endless losing and never-ending wars ain't going to cut it. It's not going to work. It hasn't been successful in 64 years. It won't be successful 64 years from now, period.
Yep. And I understand. And I understand where Oz is coming from. And I mean, you know, the thing is that the problem I have with the whole interventionism ideology or policy that's been going on for, you know, centuries, all right, is that we always give an out to the perpetrators of the problem, period.
Mm.
And, you know, we need to take the same approach to Islam as we took with Nazism. Annihilate them.
Well, but here's the thing, Ron. See, and I love this when people try to equate the Middle East with Europe. We attained victory over the Nazis because, well, the Nazis surrendered. And we were able to have victory. Well, we were able to have victory in Europe, Ron, because we came from Europe. I mean, our religious ideologies were the same. It's a different fight over in the Middle East. It was Europe was Christians fighting other Christians. It's a different landscape. So to try to say, well, we had victory in Europe, we can have victory in the Middle East. It's apples and bowling balls.
Oh, I
as
agree.
Far as I see it.
I could not agree more.
Well, that's my whole premise. It's apples and bowling balls. You can't equate what happened in Europe in the 40s and what's happening now in the Muslim world. You can't put it in the same sentence.
Well, and I think we've fallen victim to this ideology, and we saw it in earnest in Vietnam, and we're seeing it now. We've seen it ever since Vietnam. This idea that we can fight a politically correct war, and
mm-hmm.
that's just asinine. The way you fight a war is the way that Genghis Khan fought a war. You kill everything in your path until there's no one left who has the will to fight you.
Hmm.
It's pretty simple. But we haven't been doing that. And I think that is what has emboldened these people, given them the idea that, hey, we can rise up, we can do this and that. You know, I mean, let's be honest. This is the problem. Europe has not been honest with themselves. They want to live in this self-stylized, utopian, socialist ideology where they welcome all, you know, comers. And now they're covered up with these flipping Muslims, and they're having buyer's remorse.
Well, absolutely. And you know, and in the chat room here, Europeans don't want to become Muslims. They've been deluded by the same forces which assault the U.S. Now, we're seeing an Islamitization of Europe because European leaders are capitulating to these people.
Exactly.
Period.
That's what I mean.
Right. And I just want to accentuate that. Europe is allowing. You see, they're capitulating. They're surrendering. They're pandering, which is what our president is doing now. Pandering and pandering and coddling and making excuses and sympathizing. Doesn't work.
Right.
It doesn't work. It just adds fuel to the fire.
And this whole idea, see, this goes back to this idea that's been pushed for decades of globalization, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
But until the people in Europe, and I mean European leaders and European citizens in, you know, Greece, Spain, Italy, France, Germany, until they stand up and say, no, we don't want your kind here. Get the hell out of here. If you want to assimilate into our society and become one of us, we're all for it. But if you want to come in here and start trying to dictate, and we have to accommodate you, sorry, the door's over there, find your way out, or we're going to just kick your ass out. I mean, I'm so tired of this coddling Islam and coddling this ideology, and it's a suicide pact.
Well, Ron, like you said last week, you know, the Arab world and this fight keeps the military-industrial complex in full bloom. And let's face it, there's a lot of money in war. Rothschild said, when there's blood in the streets of France, I buy. I mean, it's just, you know, this is just to continue a never-ending war, you know, to take more money away from us, take opportunity away, and we get the false fake war on terror, which is just as real as the war on poverty, the war on drugs. And you know, again, if we don't have war, what does the military-industrial complex do? Well, they have to sit on their hands, right? So this is very profitable. War is profitable, and lives are expendable, and that's all this is.
Sure. And, our troops...
And we're just going round and round.
Yep. They're used as nothing more than fodder. And until people around the world begin to denounce Islam and stop pandering to Islam and saying, well, it's just a few radicals. Horse manure. It is a problem. And until we wake up and recognize it and state it for what it is, we're screwed. And Oz is correct in that, you know, I don't blame America. I don't blame Americans. I blame our government and our media for spoon-feeding this stuff by the bucket load to the American people on both sides of the supposed political aisle, whether it's the left-wing or right-wing media, whatever that's supposed to be. You know, they keep reinforcing to us this political correct garbage that is going to bury us. And, you know, we want to be more like Europe and more horse manure.
Which is a losing battle.
We've got to be pragmatic enough to call a spade a spade. And I'm sorry that, you know, people just don't like it.
No, this is just going to be a never-ending circle jerk, because war is profitable, and and we just have these round and round discussions, and that's all it's going to be. And guys, I got to take off because I got to prepare for my show, which starts in under 12 minutes. Hope to see you there.
Put me a link in the chat, please.
Sure, my friend, absolutely. I can do that.
You know, I remember the time when you know, the media and everybody said communism is dead, socialism is dead, and it's not.
Nope, it's alive and well. So I'm gonna cut out. I'll let you and the Magic Man do your thing, and I'll be starting in 10 minutes. Hope to see you all there.
God bless, sir.
Right,
and I will be there with bells on. You can bet on.
Thank you very much, my brother. Talk to you later.
You know, Michael,
yeah.
I know that Oz, you know, Oz and I have had some very good conversations, and I know where he's coming from, in part. I mean, clearly I've not walked a mile in his moccasins, but I do understand his viewpoint, and I don't wholly disagree with him. And this is the very difficult part of the conversation, where we have to understand that there's two sides to this coin, okay? One side is Islam and the other side is everybody else. I get that. But we cannot, by any stretch, simply allow ourselves to place all the blame on Islam and not recognize where some blame lies on the other side of the coin, for not taking it to them. I mean, this could have been put down decades and decades ago. This could have been handled in 1953. We could have been proselytizing, if you will, many of the Muslim countries. We could have sided with the Iranian people in 1953 and you know, pled to their common sense and the overriding human nature to survive, to live. And we didn't. And what we see now is what Oz is talking about, people being arrested for free speech.
Exactly. And you know, something that was not mentioned here that I would like to mention and get a quick take from you on it. We have 9 minutes left here. But even before that, I'm not exactly sure what decade it was. I want to say the early 1900s, but I know for a fact that the Vatican was and is currently it was infiltrated, okay, by the KGB of Russia, okay, and I know that's not saying a lot for the Catholic religion right now, and I apologize for that, but this is a matter of fact that I have researched and have verification of. And because of that, this has influenced, Catholics are supposedly the largest organizational group in the world, and because they have been, misled over decades and decades, it has definitely influenced what is going on over in Europe, Ron.
Oh, well, there's no question about it, Michael, and I think, we go back, you can go back to the Reformation, okay, the Protestant movement, the Protestant movement, and see the same basic ideologies way back then, and that is what led Martin Luther and many of the others, the Franciscans, what they called the Lollards, okay, were rejecting the Catholic reading of the Scripture or the Bible. And this is why, I found it absolutely imperative for my own sanity to understand the Scripture. And this is why I've harped so hard on the preterist reading of the Scripture. And I know it's very difficult for most Christians to even begin to open their mind to try and understand it, because we have been indoctrinated, sir, from a very long time ago to believe in something that is not true. It's not accurate. And it is that futurist belief in a future coming that gives credence to the idea of the current nation state of Israel being the promised land, the chosen ones, so on and so forth. And this has very much set the stage for an ultimate conflict or showdown between two major theologies, Islam and Christianity, steered much from behind the scenes by the Vatican, I do believe. That's just my not-so-humble opinion.
Well, you are absolutely right. I mean, I was raised in a church from when I was, 58 years ago, Ron. I'm sorry, I'm not that old. 56 and a half years ago, okay? That was Episcopal. But that is a branch of the Catholic Church.
Yeah, it's Catholic light, as they say. Here's the thing, Michael, and this is what struck me so fundamentally with the two varying doctrines, I guess, or eschatology. I don't know what fancy name they all these names. I don't fully understand all those, but nonetheless, if you look at the time of Christ, okay, and what we saw during the time of Christ, if you're reading your Bible, whether you believe in past fulfillment or a future fulfillment, put that aside for a moment. What we saw when Christ arrived on the scene is that the Jewish people were so entrenched in their religious doctrine that they simply rejected the prophecy, the very prophecy that their very religion prophesied was going to happen. When it occurred, they rejected it. Said, he's not the Messiah. Why did they do that? Well, we have to look at the reasoning, and it's found in the Scripture. And many of the Jews of that day believed, quite wrongly, as you and I are fully aware, that the Messiah was going to do certain things, and one of the things they were absolutely positive that he was going to do was he was going to destroy their enemies. And by enemies, they mistakenly believed That meant that the Messiah was going to destroy Rome and all those that opposed Judaism.
Exactly.
And what we know, or should know, from reading our scripture, is what I've stated many times, is that, in fact, the Messiah did come to destroy their enemy, and the enemy that's spoken of from the very first pages of the Bible was sin. And sin comes from within each of us. It is our nature.
Exactly.
So the enemy that Christ came to save them from was their own human nature.
Exactly, and that's what they did not understand. I mean, they were used to, in the Old Testament, sacrificing the blood of animals, and Christ came to sacrifice himself in exchange so that all people would have, you know, a way to
Correct.
Have their sins forgiven and to have eternal life. And we have 3 minutes, Ron.
And we know from that, okay, that it was all-inclusive, all right? It wasn't just one select group of chosen that had the ability to accept this redemption. Now, I would leave you with this. How many Christians do you know of today that are believing that we are living, A, in the end times, B, that Christ is going to return, and when he returns, C, he is going to destroy all his enemies. And those Christians believe that those enemies would be Islam and communism and socialism and all the various other things going on in the world. And once you recognize that, doesn't that sound an awful lot like the same mistake that the Jews made when Christ was walking among them?
Exactly, Ron. And I would say, you know, from my knowledge and my bad memory, you know, I would say that Christ and God have two major enemies. And those two major enemies would be Satan and sin.
Well, there's an interesting thing to remember in when you read through the Bible, okay? There's only one place in the Bible that mentions an entity named Lucifer. Only one. And I would challenge you to find others. You're certainly welcome to. The name or the word Satan literally means adversary.
Exactly.
Okay, when they came to get Christ in the New Testament and Peter drew his sword, Christ admonished him, "Get thee behind me, Satan." He wasn't calling him the devil, Lucifer. He was calling him his adversary. Now, I want to point out to you a passage, and I want you to think about this. And I want you to read it and think about it in your mind, because this is one that jumped out at me, that to me, knowing all the history of Israel, knowing the war that Josephus talked about, going back to Daniel 9:24, and this is Gabriel giving Daniel a vision, and he says, 70 weeks are determined for your people. I hate to say it, but Daniel was a Jew. And for your holy city, that would be the Jewish holy city, which we know would be Israel. And then he tells him why there are 70 weeks determined against his people, to finish the transgression. Well, you need to ask yourself, what transgression are we talking about? I'm telling you, it was the transgression that occurred in the garden with Adam and Eve, the first sin that placed man under the law, to make an end of sins. Okay, when Christ sacrificed himself on the cross, it did not mean that mankind in his sin nature would stop sinning. It meant that when we accept Christ and repent, when God looks upon us, he sees his Son. He doesn't see us in our sin nature. He was the perfect covering. Where the animal skins were insufficient to cover the sin and hide the human, Christ's sacrifice was perfect. And it is able to hide the human so that God sees only his Son. To make reconciliation for iniquity and to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. I believe that Jesus Christ has been anointed as the most holy. I believe that vision and prophecy have been sealed up. I've not read a single account of one credible prophet from 70 AD until today. And in order to be a prophet, we know by the scripture that you have to have 100% accuracy. I've not seen a single one. And with that, God bless you.
Take care, Ron. Thank you so much for calling in, sir, and have a great evening.
You bet. Thanks for the show, Michael.
You're very welcome, sir. Bye-bye. God bless.
Bye-bye.
I'd like to thank everyone for joining me on this special edition Friday, sponsored by the Patriot Family. And I'd like to remind everybody to keep Jesus Christ in your heart, because he is the greatest that you can have out there. There's nothing better that you can have in your life than being saved by Jesus Christ. And on that note, I will be back tomorrow evening with Exposing the Illusion at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And Mr. Ron Golden, who shared this show with me and did the last hour of it, I believe, will be on this Sunday and this Monday as well. So, and we have a variety of shows all week long. Hopefully we can keep this up and do 7 shows a week here. We will try the best that we can do. Again, thank you so much for joining me. And I am going to end the show with a song like I always do. And this song is Just Because I Like It. And that's the only reason I'm going to play it. Take care, everyone. Thank you so much. And God bless.
thoughts have all just faded in the gray. Can you see that I don't know if it's you or if it's me? If it's one of us, I'm sure we both will